Ed Willett is a member of the Chance Ensemble coming to Nicolet College this Saturday. I spoke with Ed about their performance entitled John Muir, University of the Wilderness.
On Saturday, the 30th of March, we're going to be presenting our program that's entitled John Muir, University of the Wilderness. And that title came from one of the Muir readings that is intertwined in our program. And the program is something that we debuted in 2014 in the centennial year of Muir's passing. He died in 1914. And at the time, there were a lot of events to commemorate that. And so our program is it's a combination of the music that we have written that is based on natural themes, and it's intertwined with the writings of John Muir that we perused for many months trying to find the thread that would make a logical program and something that leads in and out of our music. So I'm pretty happy with what we came up with. We've been touring it. This program on the 30th will be our 55th performance of it.
So the name of your ensemble is Chance. Can you tell me a little bit about both the origin of the name and the composition?
Sure. Yeah, the Chance is something that I started with my musical partner and life partner, Cheryl Leah, and we were in Los Angeles. That's where we met. She came up with the name, and her definition is chance as the opportunity for things to happen. And so she's always carrying the torch for that, you know, looking for where are the opportunities and how can we introduce ourselves to them. So, so that's where the name Chance came from. And I made it the Chance Ensemble when it's in this context of the Muir Show because we've added a violinist. His name is Eric Segnitz. And I knew he was up for music that was trying to reach out and trying to come up with a new configuration like this. So he's playing violin for us. And then the narrator is Norman Gilliland. And I heard Norman on a show that they do on WPR, which is a chapter a day. And I just heard his voice and thought that would be so perfect. And so that's how on Saturday we'll be cello, violin, voice for Cheryl. She's a singer, and a narration.
And cello is your instrument?
Yeah.
The vocal compositions, are those John Muir's words?
No, they're not. Those are ours. Those are actually Cheryl's. Cheryl's, if you thought of it like a little opera, Cheryl's the librettist for all of our work. And actually, it was interesting to me anyway. That was one of the first correlations that we made. We noticed that Cheryl's writing was her style of writing, at least when she's writing about natural inspirations, is very similar to John Muir's. I mean, in the choice of words and the way things are phrased. So we thought, okay, there's enough of a mirroring there that when we put these things together, it won't be bumpy. You know, I mean, you won't have one style of writing and then another completely different. So that was kind of the first link that made us think about putting these things together.
For the people who come to this performance, what will their experience be like?
Well, one thing, we're hoping it to be transformative in a way of not so much of a history lesson. It's not that kind of thing. What we went for when we picked the Muir writings, we were trying to illuminate how does someone become a character like John Muir. And so we went into how he was feeling about things, this sort of psychological landscape of John Muir. So that was in our mind when we were picking his readings. So when they come to the performance, it'll start in Scotland. the first part of the show, we'll have a little bit of Celtic music and some of the stories that Muir loved as a boy. They'll spend some time in Wisconsin, and then, you know, after just a little bit at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, that was the only university Muir went to, he ended up out in California, where that's what people think of a lot with his California days, when, you know, with his association with Yosemite and all of that, and his association with Theodore Roosevelt and lobbying to have the national park system, and, you know, that's the correlation. So it'll be a journey, and everywhere on the journey will be really beautiful nuggets of I just think it's just such beautiful writing, and Cheryl's writing works so well with it. So it's part concert, it's part narrative.
So there'll be narration flowing into instrumental and vocal music and back out again?
Yes, yes. And some of the narration comments on the music that just happened, you know, the link would be that way, and some foreshadows the next piece of ours. So it's all, the subjects are all always linked, and there's a thread through the entire piece.
It sounds like a real cool interweaving of so many things in a way that most everybody would find intriguing and accessible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, as I said, this will be our 55th performance, and it never leaves anybody in the dust scratching their head. It's not that kind of a performance. I think one of the most common comments that we get is people saying, you know, I gotta either get back into the John Muir books that I have, or go out and buy some, you know, to get more into this. So that's our favorite comment, is that to think that we've helped to, you know, carry his torch a little bit in order to reignite people's interest in what he was saying, and just because the ideas and the imagery are completely timeless. They're not dated at all. It's as current today as it was when he wrote it.
And your performance helps crack that door open for people who may know who John Muir is but not have read any of his writings. Do you call this a performance, a presentation, a show? What kind of term do you use for it?
I call it a narrative concert.
Narrative concert. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, I've been all around trying to describe it. It's a little bit difficult, you know, whenever you come up with a new kind of form of presentation, it's always interesting trying. It can help a lot just to hear a little discussion about what it is and get your head around the concept of it. But like I say, it flows effortlessly, you know, from one kind of medium to another, you know, whether it's Norman with his incredible voice for narration just on his own, or then it flows into a piece where it's accompanied by strings narration, and then it goes into a song that's on the same subject but is for strings and voice, and then his narration comes in the middle of that song and goes out. It's a real kind of tapestry of these settings that we put it in.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this narrative concert and hearing you and Cheryl and Eric and your violinist. No, Eric is your violinist.
Yeah, he's our violinist. Norman.
Norman, that's right. I think this is going to be a transporting experience for everyone who comes.
Thank you. I do too. I think like we were saying earlier, you know, the ideas that are out there are just as germane to this time as when they were written, and I think they're important.
Thanks for bringing the Chance Ensemble to Nicolet College to share with us here in the North Woods, and that's Saturday, March 30th at 7:30 p.m.
That's right, and thank you, Nancy. I really appreciate it.
Here's a taste of the Chance Ensemble's narrative concert of John Muir, University of the Wilderness. It begins with an account by John Muir when he and a friend were caught in a storm on Mount Shasta in California.
We're going to pick up their story on the descent from the mountain and the rigors that ensued.
Storm clouds on the mountains. How truly beautiful they are. Floating fountains bearing water for every well. The angels of streams and lakes brooding in the deep, pure azure, or sweeping along the ground over ridge and dome, over meadow, over forest, over garden and grove, lingering with cooling shadows, refreshing every flower and soothing rugged rock brows with a gentleness of touch and gesture no human hand can equal. A few minutes after 3 p.m., we began to force our way down the eastern ridge past the group of hissing fumaroles. The storm at once became inconceivably violent with scarcely a preliminary scowl. The thermometer fell 22 degrees and soon sank below zero. Hail gave place to snow and darkness came on like night. The wind, rising to the highest pitch of violence, boomed and surged like breakers on a rocky coast. The lightnings flashed amid the desolate crags in terrible accord, their tremendous muffled detonations unrelieved by a single echo, and seeming to come thudding passionately forth from out the very heart of the storm. After passing the hot springs, I halted in the shelter of a lava block to let Jerome, who had fallen a little behind, come up. Here, he opened a council. He maintained, in opposition to my views, that it was impossible to proceed. The ridge was too dangerous, the snow was blinding, and the frost too intense to be borne, and finally, that even supposing it possible for us to grope our way through the darkness, the wind was sufficiently violent to hurl us bodily over the cliffs, and that our only hope was in wearing away the afternoon and night among the fumaroles, where at least we should avoid freezing. Our discussions ended. Jerome made a dash from behind the lava block and began forcing his way back some 20 or 30 yards to the hot springs against the wind flood, wavering and struggling as if caught in a torrent of water. And after watching in vain for any flow that the storm might have caused, that might be urged as a new argument for attempting the descent, I was compelled to follow. "Here," said Jerome, as we stood shivering in the midst of the hissing, sputtering fumaroles, "we shall be safe from frost." "Yes," said I, "we can be in this mud and gravel, hot at least on one side, but how shall we protect our lungs from the acid gases? And how, after our clothing is saturated with melting snow, shall we be able to reach camp without freezing, even after the storm is over? We shall have to await the sunshine, and when will it come?"
"I was raised on the holy ground, a running child in fields of clover. I was living in the grandeur of my father's land. Oh, by the side of the swirling seas, I spent the days of childish wonder. Those rocks I held in my own hands, I never felt them slip away. Oh, and the wind shone bright upon the waves, and the wind blew high as I was leaving. I sailed so far away, looking for adventure.
That dwells beyond our conceitful eyes and knowledge. From the dust of the earth, from the common elementary fund, the Creator has made Homo sapiens. From the same material, He has made every other creature, however noxious and insignificant to us. They are earthborn companions and our fellow mortals. This star, our own good earth, made many a successful journey around the heavens ere man was made, and whole kingdoms of creatures enjoyed existence and returned to dust ere man appeared to claim them. After human beings have also played their part in creation's plan, they too may disappear without any general burning or extraordinary commotion whatsoever.
Grags held the dragon's eye. White trout stank from lower pools. Crystal writings dimmed upon the cliffs, with none to read at midday. Girls fell in love on the quartz sea. They took the angry captain's soul. Past the marble nymphs drowned in the pools. Men's black footprints in the sod. Past the dried seas of evenness and God. From the forest of the peaceful.
The battle we have fought, and are still fighting for the forests, is a part of the eternal conflict between right and wrong, and we cannot expect to see an end of it. So we must count on watching and striving for these trees, and should always be glad to find anything so surely good and noble to strive for.
You just heard the Chants Ensemble with selections from their performance of John Muir, University of the Wilderness. They'll be at the Nicolay College Theater in Rhinelander this Saturday, March 30th at 7:30. For tickets, call 715-365-4646 or use the link on wxpr.org. This is Nancy Richmond for WXPR.